This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
What is homophobia? Where did the term even come from? And is it a real phobia? These are the questions we're diving into today. Hi friends, my name is Archie Beadle. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm very proudly the founder and CEO at Queertown. And if you don't know, Queertown is an Australian-based, queer-led organisation on a mission to end LGBTIQA+ discrimination. If that's something you vibe with, there's a very good chance you'll vibe with Queertown. Each year, on May 17th, we mark IDHobbit, the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Transphobia, and Intersex Discrimination. Who knew there were so many ways to discriminate against our community? This year, Queertown hosted an unforgettable IDHobbit event at Melbourne's Trades Hall, where we brought together local community members, allies, local business and leaders to hear directly from LGBTIQA+ voices, experience local queer music, and come together in solidarity for the community. What you're about to hear is my opening keynote address from the day. In it, I explore the origin of this term, homophobia, why it's so important, and what it tells us about the current climate of discrimination we're seeing today. A quick heads up, there will be a couple of brief mentions of poor mental health and struggles with suicide. We won't dwell on them, but if this episode brings up anything you'd like support with, we have some incredible services listed in the show notes that you can reach out to. All right, let's get into it. Here is my keynote address from Queertown's 2025 IDHobbit event. I'm really proudly the founder and CEO at Queertown. So Queertown was started back in 2018. And really it was born out of my experiences being at school, being in workplaces, and looking around and being like, where are the people who are like me? And, you know, I remember one of my last full-time jobs was at Melbourne Museum, which is like an institution. And I remember looking around being like, where are the bloody queers? And I remember asking my manager, there was a trillion committees. And I was like, oh, is there a pride committee? And she's like, oh, what? So, you know, as usual, I found myself in the position of like setting up the pride committee, setting up the working groups, just, you know, organizing the events. And I remember at our very first meeting, we were doing introductions, and there was this older guy who was really emotional. And he said, I've been at the museum for over 16 years and I didn't know there were other people like me here. And I was just like, damn, you know, like it just really struck a chord with me. And I was like, this is really important. And so I decided to commit to Queertown full time. And in that time, we've really grown. We now provide a lot of education and training in all kinds of workplaces. We run events, we create resources. And it's a real pleasure and a privilege for me to be able to do this work on behalf of the community. And this is why we do it. And this is why IDHobbit is so important. So these statistics come from research that was conducted in 2020. We're about to get the updated study. And they found that this was Australia-wide. 40% of LGBTIQA+ Australians don't feel accepted at work. 50% of LGBTIQA+ Australians don't feel accepted by their family, and 70% still don't feel accepted in public. 70%. So these stats are often quite surprising to people still, and that's why IDHobbit exists. It's great to have pride and like go to Mardi Gras. Has anyone been to Mardi Gras before? Yes. Okay. Did anyone have a bad time at Mardi Gras? Didn't think so. Yeah. If you haven't been, mate, get your act together. You know, we have those great pieces of progress, but it's important to look at what the research tells us. And, you know, that 70% statistic, even I was surprised at first when I saw that, but I thought, well, for myself, when I'm with my queer mates in a queer space, the way that we express ourselves, the way that we communicate, it's so different to who we are when we rock up to work or sitting on the train or sometimes, you know, being at a family function. I know for myself, I'm constantly changing the way I behave because I'm worried about maybe how other people will feel, what their reaction will be. And, you know, to this day, I live in Brunswick at the moment, which is like the queerest suburb in Australia in my brain. And so I normally feel pretty comfortable walking around, but I've got so much construction on my street at the moment, and that brings in a lot of kind of masculine energy. Tradies. And so now when I leave the house, I'm thinking, am I wearing makeup? Am I dressed too femme? Am I on a date? Am I holding someone's hand? Can I give this person a kiss? And when I leave my house, I'm automatically thinking of that. So I really understand that percentage. So our vision at Queertown and why we want to throw events like this is we're working towards a future where LGBTIQA plus people experience safety, belonging, equity and representation in communities free from systemic barriers and discrimination. So, you know, just like a small little piece of work cut out. We've been really busy. Getting into the content, the last thing that I put on our housekeeping was to push yourself. And I want to kind of, I guess, put a mirror up to you. I know that for some people today, LGBTIQA plus might still be a mystery to you. Might be like, what do those letters mean? It might be new to you. But I want to remind you that you're not expected to be an expert, you know, and this is a huge barrier. Having done this work for so long now, the biggest barrier I've found is people are scared to make a mistake. People are scared to offend someone or look silly, but who here in the room in depth and detail learnt about LGBTIQA plus when you're at school? Just a giggle and no hands. Yeah. Neither. None of us learned about this growing up, so you're not expected to just be an expert. And, you know, for myself as a queer person, I like to remind people that when I figured out that I was queer, I didn't just suddenly, it's not like, oh, I'm queer, now I know how to use pronouns, you know? Like, I had to Google it and learn and figure it out. So you're not expected to magically know these things. Bless you. You're welcome. We all make mistakes. You're going to muck up. You're going to muck up pronouns. You know, I'm 32, I'm queer, I run Queertown, and I still muck up pronouns. I still mess up terminology. So it's bound to happen. But if you take something away from today, it's so much better to engage. Even if you slip up a little bit along the way, you know, I'd so much rather someone engage with me and they use the wrong pronouns, but we still have a conversation and move forward, than to avoid or ignore me because they're scared of making a mistake. So slip up. Especially today, you know, that's what we're here for, make mistakes. So let's start to figure out what is Eyed Hobbit. Because planning for today, I was like wanting to understand a little bit more about why this day exists and why we acknowledge it. So Eyed Hobbit, this is what I was doing at 3 a.m., just making the slides look prettier. So International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Intersex discrimination and transphobia. Who knew there were so many ways to discriminate against our community? So that's what today stands for. And it lands on May 17. Sorry, I keep saying today, but technically Eyed Hobbit lands tomorrow on May 17 on Saturday. It's on May 17 every single year. Does anyone know why it lands on May 17? It's actually the anniversary of the World Health Organization declassifying homosexuality as a mental illness. Does anyone know what year that happened? Any guesses what year that declassification would have happened? 1990. So who here was alive in 1990? Yeah. What was it like? Tell me that. Wow. It's crazy. 1992, so I just... Yeah, 1990, most of us were still alive, and to think at that time, which does not feel long ago, it was still medically a mental illness to be homosexual in 1990. So here's a little snapshot of some Australian history, because when I do this work, I go to workplaces all the time to do this training, and we send out pre-workshop surveys that people can fill out, and there's some very interesting comments in them. Normally they're all positive, but sometimes you get someone being like, why do we have to do this? Why is this still happening? Is this compulsory? And this gives you a little bit of a snapshot of just how recently this discrimination has taken place and progress has been made. You know, it was wasn't until 1975 that the very first state in Australia decriminalised homosexuality. And then from 1975, it wasn't until 1997, until Tasmania was the last state and territory to decriminalise homosexuality. So there's still people living today who have a criminal record because they're homosexual, because they grew up at a time where it was criminal to be homosexual. So first Mardi Gras was held in 1978. It wasn't the fun celebration that we've all been to. It was a riot. It was a rebellion against police brutality. And in 2013, we finally got some legal protections. The Sex Discrimination Act amendment says that you technically, legally can't discriminate on people based on their sex, their gender, or their sexuality. So thanks, government. And then in 2017, we had marriage equality come through. Do people remember the plebiscite? And yes, it was like a really rough time for the community. People are often like, oh, aren't things so much better now? But I'll never forget that experience of being at town hall with thousands of queer folks. We were holding each other, waiting to hear. It kind of felt like we were in the Hunger Games, this weird game show, and there was a countdown to the results, and we were going to find out, does the country think we should have rights? And I'll always remember when they said it's yes, and we all just cried, and it wasn't happiness. It was like this sick relief. And to remind people, that was only 60% of people who said yes. So there's still 40% of the population who said no to that, which is important to remember. In 2021, the first state, Victoria, banned conversion therapy. However, to this day, conversion therapy, the practice sometimes referred to as torture, of trying to convert people to no longer be lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, still happening in a number of states and territories. Mardi Gras is held in New South Wales. Does anyone know when conversion therapy was decriminalized in New South Wales? 2024, right? So Mardi Gras has been happening for all these years. In the same state, people have been put through conversion therapy. So that's how relevant this work is. And that's why it's so important to celebrate today. So thank you for being here to acknowledge it. We're just in like the little bit of the heavy bit of the day, and then it's going to be like fun again. But, you know, it's a balancing act because we need to be realistic about what today is all about. So I'm going to show you some stats that are heavy, and then we'll be fun and colourful. But these stats are from two studies, Australian-based, thousands of participants, and there's a couple of references to poor mental health and suicide. And then we're going to move on. So we touched on that. They found that within 12 months of this survey, 35% of LGBTIQA plus Australians had experienced verbal abuse, 60% had been diagnosed with depression, and 75% of members of our community of all ages had seriously considered suicide in the past 12 months. And I'm sorry, it gets a little heavier. Almost 60% of young LGBTIQA plus people had seriously considered suicide in the past 12 months. So that's why I take this work so seriously. Often my job is really fun and colourful, but this is why we do it. We know people who are part of this statistic who shouldn't be. I personally resonate with each of the stats that we've had up here, and it shouldn't be that way. And LGBTIQA plus people are 20 times more likely to take our own lives than the broader populations, 20 times. We're losing our community at a rapid rate. And I always think, you know, if this was the number of car accidents that was happening in Australia or Victoria, it'd be on every billboard, there'd be campaigns on TV, you know, resources would be poured into it. But our community is not prioritised in that way. And that's why we need community support. That's why we need you coming to events like this, because we're having to push up. So, inclusion saves lives. It's true. It's not an exaggeration. It could be, you know, to see that out of a person's workplace, home, or public, someone's workplace might actually be the place they feel most accepted. So don't underestimate the power you have, even at work, to create a safe space for someone. So this was me thinking about Ida Hobbit this week, and I was thinking, okay, so homophobia, the day started, it was first called Idaho, which I kind of love. No, Utaho. So it started about homophobia, and I was thinking, okay, so what is homophobia then? Like, what actually is it? And so I was looking at the term phobia, and according to the dictionary and medical reports, a phobia is a type of anxiety disorder, relatable, characterized by persistent, excessive, and irrational fear. It's also medically diagnosable, and it has physical symptoms like rapid heartbeat, shortness of breath, dizziness, and panic. So that's what a phobia is. And what it's describing is a fight or flight response, right? So it's like when someone sees a bear, the animal version of a bear, and... And you have that experience, right, where you get scared, you're sweating, your heartbeat. That's what a phobia is. So then I was thinking, so what's homophobia? Is it like a... you see a gay person or a gay couple and your heart speeds up and you sweat and you need to run? And no, we know that it was actually research conducted by a university in America to disprove the fact that homophobia is not a real phobia. Those symptoms do not occur. So I was asking myself, if homophobia isn't a real phobia, then what is homophobia? So I found out, which I didn't know, that homophobia is a very new recent term. So it was coined in the 1960s by an American psychologist and writer named George Weinberg. And what's interesting is that George wasn't part of the community, but he was just witnessing this phenomenon around him. And it happened when he was going to an academic event and he was bringing one of his friends who was a lesbian, and he told his colleagues about it, and he noticed this like reaction in his colleagues. And so it led him to this research about homophobia. And through his research, he coined the term and described it as prejudice wrapped up in irrational fear and discomfort towards being in close proximity to homosexuals, which I think is a really interesting way to put it, because through his research, what he did was he shifted the problem away from LGBTIQA plus people. And what his research and the paper that he published discloses is the problem isn't with homosexuals. We know that homosexuality has always existed, and it existed in a number of different species on the planet. He identified it as a social problem with how people react to homosexuals. So I wanted to take a moment to give you a snapshot of queer history and the fact that we have always been here, because although it wasn't until 1990 that homosexuality was declassified, it was actually only added to the mental illnesses in 1948. So it's actually a really short period of time that it was classified. So I want to give you a snapshot of our existence over time. There's lots and lots of examples. So try to picture a map of the world and these isolated examples. There's same-sex couples depicted on tombs in Egypt, this one dating back to 2400 BC, with the couple's children behind them. Can you imagine? Does anyone have that many kids? Stressful. In India, there's the term hijra to this day. In Western terms, we might understand to be similar to transgender or gender diverse, have held sacred roles in communities for thousands of years, references in holy Hindu texts. And I get to meet so many people through this work. And at the end of last year, someone came up in a session and said that where he grew up in India, it's still custom for someone who's hijra, when a baby is born, to come and bless the family, bless the baby, bless the home to this day. In North American Indigenous communities, you may have heard of two-spirit people, often recognized at a really early age as being two-spirit, were revered in their communities as spiritual leaders. And what's interesting is that they were often seen as incredible child rearers. So, you know, they were seen as an asset to the community. Think of a young person learning from someone with unique insight into both a male, female, masculine, feminine experience. And that was a positive thing. And it breaks my heart to see how trans people are framed today by political leaders and the media, not as revered or as spiritual leaders, but as taboo or inappropriate or wrong or unnatural or a threat. And for anyone who has trans people in your lives, which I'm sure many of us, like I know for myself, the trans people in my life are the most empathetic, compassionate, resilient, kind, loving people. Anyone who has to face that level of criticism each time they leave their house builds a really strong person. And here in Australia, we have brother boys and sister girls from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. So we've always been here, you know, for thousands of years. We're a perfectly natural part of human diversity. People ask, well, what happened? Well, homophobia, along with all the other phobias, was imported. Colonization disrupted and destroyed so much of our history and culture. Just a casual list of some of the things that, you know, colonization brought to us. You know, having a think of what was existing in Indigenous communities before colonization arrived, we got some patriarchal gender roles, we got Christian moral codes, sodomy laws, which suddenly criminalized homosexual intimacy, we got binary gendered systems, queerness suddenly became an illness, we started to medicalize queer bodies and intersex bodies, we silenced local knowledge and destroyed history and culture. Masculinity was equated with dominance and superiority in every part of society. We outlawed family structures that were not heteronormative and embedded stigma, not just socially, but also in our law, in our education, in our medicine, in our religion. You know, today I asked who here learnt about LGBTIQA+ at school. Not a single hand went up. You know, we've literally been erased by colonization and these new norms. So the thing that I got to with, you know, how do I approach Ida Hobbit and how can we do something about it? These four E's, I was like, come on, girl, you can do it with one letter, you know? I think I got three E's and one, there wasn't an E, and I was like, come on, girl, we can get an E. So, you know, education is the biggest part. As soon as someone has the skills and the language, it's a game changer. So we need more education. Exposure, which just means exposure to community, meeting queer people, being exposed to stories from a young age. You know, we've got so many parents in the room. It's never too early to talk about LGBTIQA+ folks. Engaging with community like you are today, and empathy. You know, empathy is such a big piece. And what I've learned through my work is, you know, when I work in regional parts of the country, I've worked with, you know, groups of tradies at depots. And at the start of the session, they don't even want to sit close to each other, typically. You know, they're just kind of like sitting there like this. And then by the end, once I've shared my story and spoken about it, the connection, I've literally had people say, you've changed my mind in 60 minutes. Or like, I'm going to go home and talk to my kid who I've had problems with about their pronouns. You know, sometimes it's just that empathy build. So this is literally what we're doing day to day. And that's why I'm so grateful for you to invest in our work, because the only way we can do this is investing in queer community. And some of us at Queertown in our workplaces, we got trained. We had LGBTI training that was run by people who weren't members of our community. And it really showed. It really showed. It was literally every slide, and the person would be like, I'm not a member of the community myself, but I hear that. So book Queertown, please. So in the name of time, I'm going to just briefly give a little refresher that's going to tie in really nicely to some of the chats that we have today, and that help to clarify this acronym, LGBTIQA+. Which at Queertown I've come to define as a collection of communities brought together through shared experiences. So some of those experiences relate to gender, some relate to our bodies, some relate to attraction. However, what I've found in my life is often what brings us together is experiences of resistance and oppression. These three terms, sex, gender, and sexuality, are the building blocks of LGBTIQA+, and these experiences that have come to be discriminated against. So my friend and ally, Elsa, is going to help to just clarify here the difference between these three terms. Some of you will be like, I know this. Other people will be like, thank you for the refresher. So quickly, sex. This is sex. Sex is assigned at birth by a medical provider on the basis of our bodies. So sex is just talking about bodies. That includes genitalia, reproductive organs, hormones like estrogen and testosterone, chromosomes. That is sex. The difference with gender is gender is our internal sense of self. It's our identity. It's who we know ourselves to be. And science tells us that by the age of 3, on average, a young person has a sense of their gender, who they are in the world, how they want to express themselves. If you've raised little kids before, you've probably seen that start to come out. Gender is something we figure out and share with others, and it's closely linked to the way we express ourselves. So the clothing you're wearing today, your haircut, if you wear makeup or not, the way people sit, my body language, you know, if I run the whole workshop like this, we're talking about gay stuff today, as opposed to like, hey everyone, we're talking about gay stuff today, you know, often that is part of gender expression. So that's the difference. Sex is bodies, gender is identity. And when it comes to sexuality, which is a term that I really dislike, I wish we had a different one, we're talking about attraction. But it's about so much more than sex. And sex, unfortunately, has been used against us by conservative religious institutions, political bodies to dehumanize us. We're talking about companionship, love, romance, emotional connection, family units, rainbow families. Yes, physical attraction too. But what I always say is LGBTIQA plus folks, here's another letter for you. We're often reduced to 3 Bs, bodies, bedrooms, and bathrooms. What does your body look like? Who are you sleeping with? And which bathroom do you want to use? You know, to the point where people actually vote on it. In times, can you imagine like someone coming up to you and saying, so what does your body look like? Who do you sleep with? Unless you're my best friend, like politely, please fuck off, you know? So it's about so much more than just sex. So each of us has a relationship with sex, gender, and sexuality. And for some of us, your understanding of those things may change over time. But those three terms build into this acronym that we use and that we've referred to today. And because I'm not a savage, we've color-coded it, obviously. Thank you. So most of the labels here you can see, or the categories or the communities or identities, relate to attraction. The T, will spend a bit of time today learning about trans and gender diverse experiences. That's where gender comes in. Intersex relates to sex characteristics. So someone born with natural, biological, innate sex characteristics that don't fit the medical norms that have been invented for female or male bodies. So bodies are very diverse and complicated, and our medical norms, written by colonial patriarchal systems, have not made room for diverse bodies. And the plus symbol acknowledges that there are even more communities out there. And we've spoken about a couple, you know, two-spirit, brother boys and sister girls. So that's the acronym. And to kind of wrap up my section and get to our first music act, I just wanted to preface what allyship is all about. And for those of you today who are kind of like hungry to do something, it's important to remember that allyship is not treating everyone the same. And I put that in quotation marks because I hear it all the time. People say, oh, I just treat everyone the same. And it comes from a good place. It's often someone saying, oh, I treat everyone with respect or kindness, but it's actually super unhelpful because we're all really different, you know? So true allyship, and this is true for lots of minority communities, it's actually embracing, celebrating, acknowledging those differences. They're important.
I hope you enjoyed listening to the opening keynote of Queertown's 2025 Ida Hobbit event. As I said, my name is Archie Beadle, the founder and CEO at Queertown, which is an Australian-based queer-led organisation on a mission to end LGBTIQA+ discrimination. If you'd like to learn more about the work we do at Queertown, access some of our free resources, or get involved, please reach out to us at queertown.com.au. And if this episode sparked something for you, share it with someone in your life. It could be a friend, a colleague, a sheltered uncle, and let's keep the momentum going.
If this episode brought up anything you'd like support with, remember we have some incredible services listed in the show notes ready to provide you with the support you deserve. Finally, we want to say a huge thank you to Joy Media for partnering with us on this special episode. Until next time, keep listening, keep learning, and let's end LGBTIQA+ discrimination together.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.